Welcome to Venturi's Voice. Join me as I chat with big thinkers, decision makers, and leaders in the world of tech. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, guys. Today we're joined by Diego Gysi, who is Director of Engineering for one of the Fortune 100 in New York. It's great to have you join us today.
Thank you, Ben. Yeah, appreciate the invite and looking forward to talking to you.
Yeah, cool. We've got loads to talk about, and this is particularly very interesting for me, the topic, which is how to build a strong career in tech. Because I can imagine a lot of people are out there thinking, how on earth do I, you know, scale up? How do I take the next step? It's such a common thing. So we'll get more into that in a little bit, but just to get the ball rolling, so we know a little bit about you, could you give us a bit of insight into your route into tech and how you started and how it's worked?
100%. So I'm currently in New York City, as you said, for the past like 7 years, but my career actually started around like 15 years ago, like back in 2006. One thing that I did in my career is that I started really early. On my first year of college, I had like a technical degree before I joined college. So I did in kind of like high school, I did kind of like a parallel degree in networking engineering. And so the first year of college, I actually tried to get an internship and I was working at the same time that I was doing the computer science degree. And this is one thing that is really different in Brazil, where I'm from, is that you are allowed to work while you're studying. And I think that is an amazing advantage. So I basically started as a kind of like a technician helping to fix computers and helping people to use kind of like Microsoft Office and stuff like that, right? But on my second year, I was able to get an internship in kind of software development. And back in the day, Java was a cutting edge technology. And I was lucky enough to get into Java really early on. I mean, 2006 is not 2007, actually. It's not really early for Java, if you look back, especially in the US and maybe in the UK. But in Brazil, it was really early days. And then, I worked as a software engineer for maybe 5 years. I was like a project manager for a while. I hated it. Moved back to be an engineer. Then I really got into Agile, like extreme programming and kind of like all the things about test-driven development, pair programming, all the things about kind of like Kent Beck, Martin Fowler. And I actually ended up creating like a Coding Dojo meetup group to help other students to learn pair programming, TDD. And back in the day, so like around 2007, 2008, I knew no English. So I actually started to learn English after going to a conference and not being able to understand anything that the speakers were saying. Then I joined ThoughtWorks as a consultant back 2011. Then I ended up coming to New York the first time in 2013 for a project. It was my first time ever outside Brazil. And I came to kind of like to finish a release of a big project. And it was the craziest experience ever, but I learned a lot. And one of the tips that I got back there that had a big impact in my life was one of my coworkers said to me, when you get to New York, are you going to be there for a month, change your LinkedIn profile to New York, just to see if recruiters or if people are going to be interested on your resume, just more like to see how good is your resume. And then I got tons and tons of recruiters messaging me on LinkedIn, and they end up doing interview for a few companies. And by one mistake, I ended up kind of like being interviewed by the CEO and the VP of engineer of a small startup. And they thought I had a working visa in the US, but I hadn't. And we did all the interview process. And at the end of the interview process, I kind of like asked, are you guys, what about the work visa? They said, we thought you had it. And we kind of abort the process. But 2 weeks later, they really liked me. And they kind of like, okay, come here. We're gonna talk about visa and all that. So they moved to New York City in 2014. Then I was in this small startup for 3 years. And for the past 4 years now, I'm working with a big company, as I said. I'm currently a director of engineering. But I started as an engineer, moved to be engineer manager, and now I'm director, manager of managers. And I have transitioned multiple technologies, multiple processes. But that's more or less the summary of my career.
Yeah, that is unbelievably interesting. That should be made into a Netflix film.
I can probably do it. There's a lot of funny career yeah. stories.
Yeah, that is a really cool story. I mean, it's interesting because I often ask that question about people's, you know, career histories. And everybody has a different kind of route. No one has the same kind of, you know, school, college, junior role, senior role, manager. It never happens. Everyone has a different story. And yeah, yours is particularly interesting. So that's great. So we're going to talk about having a strong career in tech. So in your opinion, what does it look like, or what does it mean to have a successful career in technology? What would you say?
Perfect. So this is a question that I've thought a lot about it. And over the last almost 2 years, I have been trying to write a book around career abroad, more like to try to help, let's say, engineers in kind of like developing countries like Brazil or, I mean, West Europe, like all around the world, like to kind of like how they can take their career to the next level. And what does it mean, right? So, and after kind of like researching a lot, kind of like reading a lot of book, kind of talking to a lot of people, my answer to that question is, the summary is, a successful career is a career where you have, let's say, you have ever-growing levels of impact and influence. So by that, I mean, you are kind of like, you're challenging yourself, you are kind of like increasing your impact on all the projects, on all the organizations you work. You're influencing, I mean, not in a bad way, in a nice way, by mentoring, by kind of like bringing up new ideas that more junior, let's say, engineers or more junior folks in your organization. And you're kind of like your impact, your level of impact, like increases and increases and increases. And if you look back on a resume, like a way that I like to see if someone has somehow successful career or not is like, are they on a kind of like on a linear progression where they're just kind of like they move from one job to another, but is more or less the same level of responsibility, more or less the same technologies, or are they challenging themselves and going kind of like promotions and titles are not the thing that I'm looking at, but is they are usually good proxies to kind of like to tell. And if I see someone that, let's say, has like a, I don't know, 10 year career in software development, are they kind of like progressing? Are they going from, let's say, junior engineer to kind of a senior to maybe a tech lead to maybe like a staff engineer? Or are they staying as an engineer kind of like for 10 years? Like, what kind of like impact does this person has on the projects and the companies? What kind of transition, right? Like, one thing is you start on a small startup, then you go to a big company and you have completely different kinds of challenges, and you have to find what you like. But I mean, the summary of this question is impact and influence, and impact comes first, right? So try to always be increasing your impact, and I can talk about the how and where after.
Yeah, I mean, so when you look to employ people, so you're saying you don't really look at the linear progression as like a tick. Do you always look for people that eventually you're going to want to move them up within the business?
Yeah, that's another. So I mean, one thing is kind of like someone that has, let's say, a 15 year, 20, 30 years career is a lot easier to tell, like, okay, how successful is this career? Another thing is, let's say, someone that's just starting and that person doesn't have a lot of like history, I would say, right? So there are a lot of other things you have to look at, right? I mean, depends a lot on the role and what you need at the moment for your company. Are you kind of like, there's a big push for diversity now, right? Like, I mean, it should have been decades ago, but I mean, we're talking about this now. So whenever you're hiring, I would say the decision is a lot more complex because it involves multiple pieces of the puzzle, right? What does the team need? What is the kind of, like, let's say, code base you have? What is the kind of, let's say, I don't know, relationship you have with your product partners? Like, what is the size of the team, right? So I would actually try to decouple, like, hiring versus career progression, right? Those are different. I don't look at successful careers exactly for hiring, but they could be a good tool to know, like, is this someone that's going to kind of, like, raise the bar, right? Is this someone that's on a kind of, like, exponential growth, or someone that, when I mean linear, is I mean kind of like staying flat, almost kind of like just moving company's titles, but doing the same thing and not kind of like really kind of getting out of the comfort zone.
I mean, on this podcast, I speak to a lot of kind of people that are at the top of their game. So what would you say separates someone who's a world-class performer from everybody else?
So I think impact and influence is kind of like a super high level concept, right? What I like to break it down is what I call the four P's, right? So what I mean by the four P's are like the four pillars of a successful career in tech. So the four pillars are platform, product, process, and people. So what I see the big difference is that the world-class performers, the people that are on the top of their game, they are not only, let's say, focused on the technology, on like learning languages and only be kind of like a master of, let's say, coding, let's say, but they are also able to kind of like have a really good impact on the product, on their, from the customer perspective, right? They help to raise the bar in terms of user experience, in terms of how we manage projects, how we break down like a requirement, how we work with design, and they're also able to see the impact on the processes that we have on everything else, right? And also on the people. But so just to explain a little bit more is, early in your career, it's totally okay for you to kind of like, all you do is to learn, let's say, new programming language, new like techniques, new kind of like shortcuts, all those things that are on the first bucket, on the first pillar that I call platform, right? And you get really good at that, right? At coding, engineering. But after at some point, the only way to grow is if you expand the horizon and you go to what I call to the multiplier pillars, right? That are process and people. At some point, you have to create, to kind of like help to shape a process that allows the team, allows the company to grow, right? Sometimes, like, even if you're the best software engineer out there, if you have like a bad process and you don't have like a good culture, a good relationship among the people, you're going to be kind of like running circles, yeah, right? And that's what I see, kind of like that big separation between kind of like the people that are growing, the people that are kind of like the top of their game, and the people that are stuck, right? It's like they zoom out a little bit and they see things from kind of like from the outside, right? And the outside is they're able to break down those four pillars and they're able to contribute in each one of those four areas, instead of being kind of like deep in only one.
Mm. So this is interesting. So now I'm intrigued because, so where do you look to for what resources do you rely on to kind of stay ahead of the game and kind of progress yourself? Do you listen to podcasts, or you mentioned before you read a lot of books? Where do you go to for inspiration?
Awesome. So in my case, I read a lot of books. I talk to a lot of people. I mean, always trying to innovate, right? But I think for my career growth, I have like a few kind of rules that I try to follow. I think one of the rules that I try to follow is kind of like to try to challenge myself to change at least one of the four P's every 2 years or so. And by that, what I mean is, for example, if I'm working on the same, let's say, on the same platform, so let's say I'm working with, let's say, Java, or I'm working with let's say, iOS development for 2 years. And I'm working with the same kind of like the same product, the same kind of project constraints, the same kind of processes. Like I'm using more, let's say, agile process, but like more or less is like, and I'm surrounded by people that think the same way. What I try to do is every 2 years or so, I try to kind of like, which one of those pillars can I change? Can I change to go to work on a different kind of product, a different business domain? Let's say going from finances to education, or can I try to change, let's say, the platform that I work, right? Can I go from, let's say, iOS to Android? Can I kind of go from web to mobile? Can I go from, let's say, mobile to data science, right? But kind of always keeping like a few of those pillars kind of like there as kind of like stable pillars for you to, that allow you to move. So that has been something that I have done in my career, is like always kind of like zoom out a little bit, look at the market, look at kind of like what I'm doing and what can I change that would kind of like push me a little bit out of my comfort zone and kind of move me in a kind of like unlinear progression, right? Because here's the thing, Ben. One thing that I always tell to engineers and everybody that I talk to is you almost always, you're able to kind of move back. Like by that, I mean, if you have, let's say, you are a software engineer on a company X for 3 years and you're kind of like performing, you're outperforming there. If you have opportunity to be, let's say, an engineering manager or a tech lead, and you take that opportunity, and it doesn't work, right? You can always kind of like, if you have a good relationship and you have the skills, you can always move back and be a software engineer. But it's not every day you have the opportunity. So I'm out for like, be always looking, always interviewing, always kind of talking to people, and always like trying to see the big picture and like trying like to do a little experiments, like a little prototypes. Let me go to this role and see how it works. If it doesn't, I move back. As I personally did, I kind of like early in my career, I took the challenge to be a project manager. After 6 months, I was exhausted. That was not the kind of job that I like it. But you know what? That same job, and then I moved back to be a software engineer. That same job, because I kind of like, I studied PMP. I studied kind of like CMMI. I studied a lot of things. Later on in my career, more than 10 years later, helped me to be a better engineer manager. So if I had not tried, right, it would be a lot simpler for me to just stay as a software engineer doing my job. But I kind of like went out of my comfort zone, right? The same thing when I took a job to work, let's say, on an English-speaking environment. I was completely out of my comfort zone. It was my first job. My native language is Portuguese. And I mean, I almost kind of like, I would do crazy things. I would kind of like listen to audiobooks nonstop for 12 hours to see if I could understand things. And that's how I learned. I mean, wow. That's how I grew up. But yeah. I knew that I could go back and kind of like be working on a Brazilian company, speaking Portuguese all day long. But the opportunity to be working with, let's say, folks around the globe, right? India, US, Europe, would not be kind of available for me every day. So I took the opportunity, I challenged myself, and...
Yeah,
that's how I grow.
I think personally, I find it incredibly important to step outside your comfort zone. I think that's something that's so important for people to do. And you've demonstrated that to the nth degree. So, you know, when people are looking to get promoted within the business, what do managers look for in that one of their employees? If you look at it from that side first.
Awesome. So... I would say it goes back to the what I call the two I's, right? Impact and influence, and the four P's, right? And there are different levels of promotions, right? One thing is when you are promoted, let's say, from, let's say, a junior engineer to kind of like a more mid-level, right? Then there is a promotion from, let's say, a more mid-level to senior. Then there is a promotion from a senior to tech lead or staff engineer, right? And at different stages, you have different expectations. But if I could summarize, like early in your career, like let's say on the first, let's say maybe 5-10 years, your focus should be on, let's say, on the contributions on the platform and on the product. So you should be really good at kind of like really understanding kind of like the language, the frameworks, the kind of like the techniques, right? You should get fluent in every language that you work, in every, let's say, framework that your company is using. That should be the foundation there. And you should get really good at kind of like helping to deliver projects, help to plan things, help to kind of like unblock things, right? Those two first pillars, like platform and product delivery, are the foundation of your career for when you go from junior all the way to mid-level, and you get kind of like almost in the border between mid-level and senior. But then, impact and influence is like, how can you, let's say, document your accomplishments, quantify like the impact that you're having on those two pillars early in your career? So start kind of like documenting all the things. Like start, one of the top tips that I give to all the engineers that I work with and all the people that I talk is plan your day every day. Like start your morning, even before you turn on the computer. I like to do this offline on paper, right? Plan like everything that's, do a brain dump, right? Everything that's your mind, kind of what you have to do and what you would like to do, right? You don't want to do just what is expected from you. Like you don't want to do just the tasks, right? You want to see, okay, what are the opportunities for improvement, right? If you're working on a big code base that doesn't have tests, that kind of like has, let's say, performance problems, put like an item there every day, and kind of like every day you have a blank new page, and you write down, and you at the end of the day you check what you, and the intent is not to kind of like to check everything that you wrote there. No, it's just more to kind of like for you to kind of recap and iterate. And by doing that, you're able to document and quantify and look back, right? Because one thing that I found is really kind of like hard is that people do a lot of things, but when you ask, okay, what have you done this year? What are your big accomplishments? They don't know out of top of their head, like exactly what they did. And they lose a lot of value, a lot of potential for promotion because they're not able to kind of list out those things. So keep track of those things. And so I was talking about impact and influence on, let's say, platform and delivery. That's the first core. Then when you transition to a more senior, then your role kind of becomes to, you're still really good at platform and delivery, and you should keep that way. But now you have to look beyond, and you'll have to look at kind of like, what are the problems that we are seeing? What are the patterns of problems we're seeing again and again, right? That come off project after project. Why are projects being delayed sometimes? Why we have, let's say, production issues, right? You go and go deep and like, oh, maybe that is an opportunity for a change of the process. It can be, oh, maybe we should, let's say, start to do like PR reviews in a different way. Maybe you should, let's say, write tests in a different way. Maybe I can, let's say, do a training to the engineers on a different way to break down projects, because the way that we are doing is causing problem A, B, and C, right? And you try to stabilize the process, because if you're able to influence the process, you're able to influence more than yourself. You're able to influence the engineers, are able to influence the product managers, the designers, the QAs, right? So, and you go to go, let's say, from mid-level to senior, from senior to tech lead, engineering manager, or staff engineer, your focus is different. It's like you're no longer trying to, let's say, deliver things fast or trying to kind of be the best one on the platform. That's also important, but you're more kind of like trying to find, let's say, people that you can mentor, like opportunities for you to share your knowledge and to try to kind of replicate those things.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. And especially this day and age, because especially in tech, people move jobs all the time. It's like every couple of years, someone will take, you know, they'll open themselves up to the job market, and then they'll try and kind of like climb the mountain that way. I mean, would you say that that's a better way of going about it? Or would you say staying in your business than getting promoted is the better way?
Great question. I would say that changing jobs for the sake of it is not a good strategy. And I have seen that is when I say to engineers, you should, on the first 10 years of your career, you should try to change jobs every 3 years or so. I mean every 2-3 years, not every 2-3 months, as I have seen, right? And you're not changing because you want a salary increase or because you want like a title change. You're changing because you have, let's say, mastered the art of your current job, of your current domain, and then you're looking for new challenge, right? You're always from the perspective of skills. So I feel that is a really bad advice to change companies. And I think it's actually a red flag. When I get like a resume of someone that is kind of like 2 months in one company, 2 months in another company, 6 months another, I feel that is a bad way. Because here's the thing, Ben, I feel that in order to be able to impact, in order to have a meaningful impact, you need time, you need projects, you need kind of like to create a relationship with people, right? So I would say that if you're moving, let's say, more often than every kind of a year and a half, every 18 months, you're probably doing it wrong. It is okay to do that once or twice if you get in a really bad opportunity, like a really kind of like bad environment. But if you're doing that consistently, like every year changing, something's wrong.
Mm, mm.
And I don't think that helps you to progress in your career. I think actually it's damaging to your career.
Yeah, I agree. And then so, if we're talking about progressing within the business and being promoted within the business, logistically, how do you go about? Obviously, we can talk about doing the changes and, you know, doing different work and looking at your workload from a different angle. But how would you approach your manager then? I mean, what kind of timescale would you say is appropriate to be asking for a promotion?
So I guess it would depend a lot on, like, for example, what is the size of the company? What kind of like environment you have? But usually I feel that trying to have, let's say, a career conversation with your manager, with your company, every quarter, at least, let's say, twice a year is ideal. And on those conversations, you can have like, okay, so here's my current, let's say, title. Here's the current expectations you have. Here's what I have done. Here's how I'm already doing kind of like, I'm a strong believer of kind of like, the promotion is just kind of like, I don't know if that's the right word, but it's just a formalization of a job that you're already doing, right? It's more kind of like, you are, let's say a mid-level engineer. And you start to look at what are the high-performing senior engineers are doing? What I'm not doing? Like, maybe you're not going to be able to do 100% of the job, but at least kind of 50%, kind of like, oh, the senior engineers, they do, let's say, they mentor the new junior engineers. They do weekly one-on-ones. They kind of like, oh, maybe they help outside their current project. They see that another team in the company is struggling with technology A. They volunteer themselves to help there, right? They kind of like, what does the next level do that you are not doing, right? You start doing that, right? And whenever you ask for promotion, the answer should be kind of your manager to say, you already knew the job. Yeah, I don't have any problem by kind of giving you the title. You're already doing everything we expect, right? It should not be I know when someone's not ready for promotion, when kind of like they ask and we look at the kind of expectations for the next level, and it's like, maybe we could try to argue this, maybe. But there's a lot of skepticism, right? A lot of people are like, not sure. I like to kind of like, when someone's ready for promotion, is like everybody's like, hey, this person is not that level yet. Oh, yeah, okay, we totally missed that. He's already doing that, right? That is a nice like promotion conversation. It's almost just like a title change.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And also, I'm thinking now about how important would you say it is to self-promote, not in terms of promoting within a
personal
business,
branding.
Personal branding, yeah, and kind of like a lot of people contribute to open source code bases and things like that. How important would you say that is?
Very important, I would say. And that's where I think I struggle a lot with my career, is to try to kind of like, how can I, in a way that I'm not bragging about myself, right? In a way that I'm actually helping people, right? To do some personal branding and to be known by one or two or three things, right? You also don't want to be the guy that's known for like the master of all, right? It's impossible, right? So you have to pick a few areas. And and try to kind of like build your personal brand there by sharing things that are helpful, things that kind of like show your passion, show your kind of like your fascination for a topic. I feel open source projects are a great way to do that. Especially if there is like a particular problem that you are kind of like you're really interested in, right? You can like have open source projects that are maybe using a framework in a different way, like creating a new architecture like pattern, or maybe even like talking about a topic that you're super passionate about. It can be kind of like going to conference. It can be kind of like creating your own YouTube channel, or it can be having a blog, having kind of like a Twitter account where you share your top tips, right? And it's not about bragging. It's about more kind of like sharing what you know so more people can learn from you. And I'm a big kind of like believer that the more you, the more people impact, and that is inside the company and outside, the more influence you have, not the other way, right? The only way to have influence is by impacting like in a positive way.
Yeah, and all, and giving back to the community as well, because I find that the tech community is a real community that people can get involved in quite easily.
100%. 100%.
Yeah.
Giving back by kind of like offering to mentor, let's say, people that are just starting in the profession, or by kind of like going to meetups and kind of like sharing what you know. I feel that like year after year, we have a lot more people in the tech industry, but a lot less people with, let's say, more than 20, more than 30, more than 40 years of experience. So those folks are super rare. And I think it's almost like your duty. If you are in the industry for so long, you have to kind of like to be guiding the new guys, the new kind of like the new folks that are joining. And the way you do that is by writing, by speaking, by, let's say, sharing open source projects, right? By talking to people. And that's the only way to scale and move the industry in a way that we all want, right?
Absolutely, yeah, definitely. So in the industry, do you think there's any skills that are undervalued?
Yes. I would say there are two things that I talk a lot about in my article about how to build a strong career. But I would say soft skills is usually the one that everybody talks about, right? It's like, yeah, I mean, you need to kind of like learn to like to run meetings. You need to learn how to kind of like write a good documentation. You need to learn how to do presentations. You need to learn how kind of like do one-on-ones, or like how to kind of like lead a project, like all those things, right? All the kind of like soft skills. But another skill that I feel that is undervalued a lot is the ability to get the things done that are not glamorous. Like, for example, often you have projects that are not that complex, or they're not super interesting, let's say, from the engineering complexity, like on the technology perspective. You're not using anything new. And there are tasks such as like organizing the backlog, like or kind of like talking to the POs, or kind of like reviewing requirements, or kind of like talking to, let's say, service, like other teams that you depend on, APIs you depend on. Like all those things are not fancy, right? They're really kind of like easy jobs to do. But a lot of engineers, they really want kind of like the hardcore, and they kind of like completely ignore, or they kind of hate, like, I don't want to do that. So I think it's important. It shows a lot of maturity, in my view, to kind of like to be the one that's doing the not so glamorous job that's needed to deliver the projects, to keep the engine running, to kind of like to keep doing things, right? So I would say that kind of like that's probably one thing that I see more and more, let's say, engineers lacking, is that kind of like level of understanding and also empathy with like the user, empathy with like, maybe, let's say, I see a lot of engineers, let's say, complaining, oh, this API is trash. This code that we're using is bad, right? But they don't actually understand the constraints that the person that developed this, or like what's going on there. They have super high expectations, but they don't try to help, right? they don't try to understand what's going on. So empathy and kind of like having maturity to do things that are needed, but not glamorous.
Yeah, that's really important. So you've been in the industry for about 15 years now or so. So is there anything that you feel is underestimated in the industry?
I would say probably process.
Right.
So I would say, so here's the thing. I think we usually, we overestimate the importance of, let's say, new technologies of like, oh, there's this new programming language and new framework. It's like we all get really excited and we're like, oh, this is going to solve all the problems we have. And we underestimate, let's say, the importance of consistency, discipline, kind of like the continuous improvement, the kind of like the ability to kind of like go back, reflect, and improve just a little bit, right? And what I mean by that is retrospectives. I think people like don't do retrospectives well. They don't like, let's say, it's rare to see a team that's doing a retrospective, let's say every week or every 2 weeks, and consistently kind of like raising important things, taking the action items, completing them, and making the process more robust every day, right? By introducing new ways of doing things. And so I feel that's why kind of like process is the way that is one of those things that is not glamorous, right? It doesn't seem to be adding up, but after months or years, you can compare, let's say, a team that was iterating on their process. Like, for example, Toyota, like as a company, right? What they did with the industry, like manufacturing, was based on like small continuous improvements, right? It's not about revolution. Software development and process is not about like, oh, we're going to change from, let's say, black to white, or we're not going to change like from one day to another. We're going to move from waterfall to edge. That doesn't work. What works is every day, right? Every week, kind of like reflecting, looking, implementing, trying out new things, and keep kind of adapting the process for your context, for your reality, right? Maybe you work on a different domain. You don't need to do continuous delivery, right? Maybe you work on a project that maybe you don't need to have like a lot of like test coverage, because every project you release, you kind of like you start from scratch again. So it's like what works for you. Forget what is on like what is written on the books. Forget what other people are talking, because your context is different. Your constraints are different. Your, let's say, skills are different. I think that is the most undervalued thing that I see. And that also applies to career, right? Is a lot easier to look at someone, oh, this person is, let's say, principal engineer. But you don't look what this person did every day for 10, 15 years to get there. You just look at the final result.
So on the topic of reflection, so if you were to look back to your career in the 15 years that you've been in the industry, is there anything that when you started, you wish you were told, but you've had to go on and learn the hard way?
Yeah, I would say, I mean, for sure, we talk about learning English, especially if English is not your native language. I think it's almost impossible to grow in tech after at some point if you don't know English, because you're always behind. Everything is English based, right? So that's probably one. I wish I could have started with English early on. But the other thing that I feel that I could have benefited more is like exactly what I was saying to you, is like having my game plan every day, documenting my accomplishments, kind of like having a more structured approach about career, is about kind of like looking things and having that kind of like a more structured way about going. But I think like another thing is like, maybe I wish I could have talked to more people, visit more companies, like tried different things. Even though I tried, like I had changed a lot of like companies. I have like used different kind of technologies out there. Maybe I should have tried more. Maybe I should have tried to kind of like experiment more. But yeah, I think those are probably the ones that I would leave.
Absolutely. So I've got quite a difficult question here. I mean, we've asked this on the show a few times and we've had some really amazing answers. So no pressure. But just to wrap things up, I'd say, what would be the cheapest investment you've made that's provided the highest return on investment in your career?
Perfect. So I think the easy answer on that would be books, right? Books provide a lot of ROI. They're super cheap. I mean, like today is, I mean, you get books for less than like $10. And if you buy used books, you can kind of like even buy books that are incredible for $1-$2, right? But I would say that the biggest things, they're probably not that cheap, but they provide the highest return on my career are online courses. And there is a specific category of online courses that are going to talk. And another thing, things that help to increase my self-awareness. And I think like one of the main tools there is therapy, right? I feel that like doing therapy in the last maybe 3 years, I have like understanding myself and able to kind of revisit events and see things that kind of impact me emotionally and why, and kind of like see why kind of, let's say, I was frustrated at different moments in my career, in my day to day. Like to actually debug your mind is almost like therapy is a way to debug your mind. And I feel that it has a tremendous impact on happiness and a tremendous like impact on like promotions, on growth, because you're able to double down on the things that bring you a lot of like engagement, a lot of energy, and reduce or kind of like minimize the things that you don't see yourself doing. So I think therapy is probably the one with has the highest ROI, and especially for me and for many, let's say, engineers that are, let's say, bilingual, like sometimes they're able to find amazing like therapists, amazing like coach in their, let's say, their home country, right? And if they live abroad, that is, I mean, they have the advantage of the currency, all that. So that is another thing, is journaling. I think journaling and writing kind of like every day, your thoughts, your like the idea of the game plan that I talk about, like having your to-do list or plan for the day, and also reflecting kind of like what things kind of like work well, what things brought you a lot of like, let's say, energy, what things kind of like drained you a lot of energy. Like that helps a lot to kind of see the patterns after days, months, and years. But the second thing is about online education. And what I mean by online education is there's some kind of specific courses that brought me a lot of value. And one of them is a course called Building Your Second Brain. So it's an online course that is about organizing your, let's say, is about this thing called a PKM, personal knowledge management, right?
Right, okay.
It's about organizing all your ideas, all your, let's say, book highlights, all the kind of like the things you learn every day in your system. And you can use like Evernote is just a software that I use, but you can use any kind of like system, and over time is almost kind of like a investment portfolio, because now you can go back and you look at all the things you learn, all your kind of like biggest insights, and connect them. You can find the connection between them. You can organize in a way. So, and when I talk about specific online courses, is I like online courses where you have like the cohorts, where you have, let's say, students, when you have, let's say, like a pace that's defined by the instructor, right? Like I don't like the online courses that you see today, kind of like where it's 100% self, you can do in one day, you can watch all videos, and that's all. I like the ones that kind of like, you know, you have to watch the class, you have to have discussion after, you have to go to the forum, you have to deliver your exercises on things that interest you. I think those are the two things that have provided me the highest ROI in my career. It's like this online course on building kind of a second brain, organizing my note system, my note-taking system, and therapy that I do kind of like twice a week, and I'm able to reflect, and is like almost kind of like a mini retrospective that you do with yourself on like the things that are important to you at work, outside work, like with friends, family, all that, is like kind of like a personal retrospective.
Excellent. Yeah, amazing advice. Yeah, I think that might wrap us up actually today, Shiego. So it's been incredibly interesting speaking with you. Yeah, thanks so much for taking time to do this. It's been absolutely excellent, honestly.
100%. Yeah, thanks, man, for inviting me. It's always a pleasure to do these things. And I think it's about doing my I was my duty with the community and to try to kind of share some of the things that I have learned over the last 15 years. I think that is, I'm always super glad to be able to do this. And if I'm able to impact a single engineer, a single person out there, I'm really happy. I think that's all it takes, right? And that person can impact someone else. And like whenever, I mean, that's the way to go. If everybody that has, let's say, more than 10 years of experience, a good career, would do this, we would be in a much better spot at this point.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favorite streaming platform.